Well, it seems like you don't need an introduction to these two, do you? You're going to get a short one anyway. Kyle Kalinske is a left-wing radio host, social democratic political commentator, and the co-founder of the political organization Justice Democrats. We want to keep it short so we can get to the conversation. Please welcome Kyle Kalinske. And to his left is the weekday, weeknight host on Russia, I should say, RT America, Scotty Nell Hughes. I was saying to Scotty, I could have gone through the whole bio, but it doesn't make sense. So let's get to it. Who is winning? Is President Trump winning? How should we measure? Well, we're going to find out in just a second. Let's start with the economy. If we listen to the president, he says it's the best economy in the history of this country. He will point to low unemployment, job growth, the stock market up until maybe a week ago or so. Is the president winning on the economy? I will start with you, Kyle, first.
Okay, so first of all, I just want to say thank you to Scotty Nell Hughes for accepting this. I think the setup's a little funny because I feel like we're, I don't know, making draft picks or something. Like this is an NBA. Like,
we're the 23rd pick in the NBA draft.
So she works for RT, and I feel like RT is a little unfairly maligned in today's political climate. And there are some wonderful hosts at RT. The late, great Ed Schultz was there, Tom Hartman. And so that's another point I wanted to make real quick before I hop into the substance is that I feel like there's a lot of the treatment of RT has been unfair for many in the establishment media, and the fact that you work for them, I don't find that bad, disqualifying in any way, shape, or form, and I just wanted to say that as well. So as far as the economy goes, is Donald Trump winning on the economy? Well, you're not going to be surprised to learn that my answer is no. He's not winning on the economy at all. So I was one of very few people on the left who actually gave Trump a lot of credit when he was campaigning, because I actually think on many issues he was more populist in his rhetoric than Hillary Clinton. He would go to the Rust Belt and he would talk about how NAFTA has been terrible for working people. He would rail against the TPP, and he was a rare Republican who would say he wasn't going to cut Social Security and Medicare. And I thought that that really helped him win. The fact that it was about 70,000 votes in the Rust Belt that really led to his victory. I mean, that was, even though Hillary won by a few million votes overall in the country, it was really 70,000 votes in the Rust Belt that made it so that Donald Trump won. And it doesn't help that Hillary Clinton was, like, tepidly against the trade deals after Bernie Sanders kind of forced her to that position. But when it comes to Trump's record, it doesn't match the rhetoric on the campaign trail. So one fact that I always bring up is that there were 93,000 jobs that have been outsourced in his first year as president. That's actually an increase. Under Obama, there were 87,000 jobs outsourced. And so I don't defend either one of their records on that front. I think if you run as the anti-outsourcing president, you should implement anti-outsourcing policies, and he simply hasn't done that. The unemployment rate being low, it's actually a very misleading thing when people bring that up as if it's evidence that, oh, he's doing well in the economy, because that's really not a very good economic indicator. Wages is a much better economic indicator, and real wages are falling. They're not keeping up with inflation. Even when Trump pretended to do good things, like I'm going to save the carrier jobs, what ended up happening was a few months later, they shipped the jobs overseas anyway, and they moved towards automation, and on top of that, they got a giant corporate welfare check. So if anything, that's worse on trade policy. So I think I'll leave it at that for now, but that's my thoughts on trade and the economy.
Scotty?
So let me give my starting off point. First of all, thank you, Kyle, for being so kind and saying in my acceptance this. The reason why I accepted this is because your opinions matter. Even if I don't agree with them, your opinions matter. And for far too long, this country, the Republican Party, didn't care about them. Not only they didn't care, they slapped you in the face with them and just completely ignored you. And I think the problem, we're at this state in the country today is because we've stopped talking to each other. We run separate ways. We find ways to demonize the other side. And instead of trying to figure out how we can work together, what works well for us, we would rather just throw lewd comments and be vicious against the other side. And guess where that gets us? Absolutely nowhere, which is where we are today. And I think that's where this is. I supported Trump out of the gate for one reason and one reason only. He wasn't Hillary Clinton. And I could not imagine this country underneath her. I'm sorry. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, the woman scared me. And that was back in 2014. She was a woman that I think was going to do extreme detriment because just like so many elitists across both sides of the aisle, she could care less about the little man. She could care less about the guy that's working three different jobs, the woman that is trying to feed four kids by herself. She didn't care about him. All she cared about was her fat cats on Wall Street. And just like Kyle pointed out, that's what Trump campaigned against. And Ed Schultz was one of my, the late great Ed Schultz was one of my mentors. Tom Hartman taught me, listen, we can disagree. I mean, both of those are an extremely amazing gentlemen. And it's such an honor to sit in Ed Schultz's position every night. And I have done nothing to change his show since it passed. Because he told me, and the reason why he picked me was because I had no problem at the network that I was on calling out that network for giving Hillary Clinton the debate questions against Bernie Sanders. I had no problem calling out saying that they had stacked the cards against Bernie Sanders, that it wasn't. I think the truth was they underestimated how powerful the Bernie Sanders supporters are. And this does have a lot to do with the economy because that's a big group of people. It's the same group of people that helped vote Trump in. And it was on one issue, a big issue, is they just wanted to provide for their family and they were tired of seeing their jobs go across seas and go across the border on bad deals that both Republicans and Democrat fat cats in Washington had made. And I agreed with Bernie on that. So now we come here today, 2 years later. And I'll say this. At least we did get NAFTA repealed, replaced. What's all in it? I'm optimistic. We saw our trade imbalance go through the roof. $500 billion trade imbalance go through the roof. Two reasons. One, we let China in the World Trade Organization. And two, we put NAFTA in. And that outsourced our jobs, and we lost jobs in middle America, which is where I'm from. So, you know, I have to say, is Trump winning on the economy? I'll give him more credit in this area than other areas. Does he have a lot of work to do? Absolutely. I still think that when it comes to the economy, yes, we're seeing, you know, I love that Wall Street's doing well. Way to go for all the Saks Fifth Avenue and Goldman Sachs people that work in his administration. Congrats. I'm glad they're making money. But that doesn't mean that you and I are feeling any better in our pockets. The tax breaks were good. They helped lead to consumer confidence and optimism. That's always good. People always feel better when they see more money in their paycheck. But is it short-lived? So he's doing better on that than he's doing on a lot of other issues. I think of all of the issues we're going to talk today, that's the highest ranking he should get. The rest of them, we definitely are going to have a lot to debate on, or a lot to talk about.
So I think that Trump, governing Trump is very different from campaigning Trump. And governing Trump, I often say that I think Donald Trump really wants to be Hillary Clinton, because Hillary Clinton gets the pat on the back from the establishment and the elites and Wall Street. And I think that Donald Trump, even though he ran against those factions, deep down he wants to be like Hillary Clinton. So you referenced NAFTA there. NAFTA 2.0 is very similar to the original NAFTA. There's maybe one or two decent provisions in there, like for our dairy farmers, but ultimately there's a giant giveaway to Big Pharma in there. So he ran against NAFTA, and I predicted he would do this, like, oh, I'm going to do some tremendous trade deals. They're going to be unbelievable trade deals. Let me just tell
That's
you.
That's a good impression.
Thank
That's
you.
Really
That's
good.
Pretty good, too. And NAFTA 2.0 ended up being very similar to the original NAFTA. And with Trump, I feel very similar to like I did with Obama in that both of those presidents had a uniquely anti-establishment mandate where they were supposed to really almost blow up the system and start from scratch and really fight for the people. But especially under the Trump administration, did not happen at all. So I would say he's been an
so
utter failure.
He's losing on the economy.
Beyond losing. And let me just give one more fact to back that up. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has returned $11 or $12 billion to defrauded Americans, giant financial institutions screwing people over. He picked a former predatory payday lender to lead the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So that tells you everything you need to know about Donald Trump.
Well, and one more other thing. It doesn't matter if you think that the economy's doing great. I think this is something that matters about each individual person. If you don't have a job, if you can't find a job, if you can't cover your electric bill, if you can't get to work because you've had to sell your car to pay for your doctor's bills, the economy's not doing good for you. And we should live in a country where every individual matters, not just this grand hopes or the grand elitist, which is where we've come to focus on.
You two have been very nice and respectful to each other.
I mean, is that disappointing? We can thumb wrestle. If you guys want to see a fight between us, I think you're going to be surprised.
No, I think there's a stark contrast as far as the perception of this president and whether he's successful on these issues. So let me piss in your Cheerios real quick. Let's go to immigration.
Sure.
Is the president succeeding, and I guess we need to define what success is he winning on the issue of immigration? You can define that however you want. I'll get out of the way.
No, the one fact that I'll bring up about immigration that really, really concerns me is that there's been a giant increase in deportations of non-criminal undocumented immigrants. And I think that really exposes that you're not a humanitarian. You don't care about people. You don't respect the fact that many people who come to this country are seriously just trying to create a better life. And you see oftentimes on the far right this demagoguery of immigrants, and I think that's totally vacuous and vapid, and they're actually doing the work of the elites, because the oldest trick in the book is where elites get working-class white people to hate poor brown and black people, and they say they're the reason that, you know, you're struggling. And the reality is, no, the rich people are running out the back door with all the money and rigging the system against both of you.
I think it goes even beyond more Trump is failing on immigration. I think both parties, I mean, who here actually thinks that the Republicans or the Democrats want to solve immigration? Neither party wants to solve it because it works really well for them. I mean, look at this. We have this caravan of mostly people who are fleeing for their lives. They're scared. They're coming up. They're trying to seek asylum. And yet, Democrats are saying, hey, definitely, you know, it's gonna get that base. We're 3 weeks out from the midterm. This is great. Because guess what? This is going to make people say that, you know, the idea that families could be separated at the border, that speaks well. That gets people to the polls to vote for me. Then Republicans go, absolutely, please, come on, let's have this be headlines. Because then, for sure, the Republicans are going to show up and say, I don't want them in my country because they're all just horrible people. So, you know, if Congress wanted to solve immigration, it's not hard. It takes common sense. There's no reason why the good countries in Central, South America, America, and Canada could not all work together and say, you know what, we have a real problem with these refugees fleeing for their lives. How about we actually send them proper groups to the countries that can hold on to them? You know what, Costa Rica, can you take 50? Canada, can you take 200? Let's actually get a solution to this problem. And here in America, the fact that you have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes just to become an American citizen, and it takes 10 years, that's ridiculous. That's not what this country was founded on. Sure, we want to know who you are that are here, that you actually want to add to America, but we also want to celebrate diversity. And the reason why we have a lot of these people jumping these borders, it's not because they don't want to be here, it's because they can't get in here. And so let's make it simplified for those that really want to be here and provide better for their families. Let's simplify. If we can simplify our taxes every April, then we can simplify the application to become an American citizen.
Let me ask you this then as a follow-up. If all that you say is true, and I will accept it as true, has the president improved or worsened the situation vis-a-vis immigration?
I think the president, unfortunately, has not had, I know this is shocking, not the right verbiage. I think across the board, he's not enhanced the conversation that we need to be having about diversity in this country.
Do you think he's a white nationalist deep down?
Or just under the surface?
Let me say this. I have a real hard time. Hate is horrible across the board. And I have a real hard time pointing out somebody that I don't, calling anybody any names that are that hateful. Can I say that some of his policies definitely could have fringes of it? Absolutely, and those are wrong. But I don't, you know, I wouldn't call someone that I don't know 24/7 what their actions are that way. That doesn't help the conversation of it. And here's the other side of it. Whether, you know, his actions are positive or not, it doesn't help the rest of us. That's the problem we have today. We're too busy pointing out, you know what, you're someone that's racist. Okay, How does that solve the problem? That's when we all go to our separate corners and we don't talk to each other. I think every single one of us here at some point has probably been labeled something that's not nice and is not correct. I know I have. So when we sit there and put those labels on, all that does is make us retreat to our little places and we never have that conversation.
I understand what you're saying, and I largely agree with it, but all I'll say is there is a time and place for name-calling when it's factually accurate, and oftentimes you see people kind of... I feel like the far right oftentimes, even though they accuse the left of being snowflakes... They're very snowflakey on their own.
Oh, we're a blizzard on our side. Trust me. I'll be the first to tell you that one. And I'm not just talking about the color of the skin, mostly.
Yeah, that exact reason is why Cowardly Coulter, as we now call her, is not sitting with us here.
Listen, there was never a hesitation when they called me on when they called me an ass.
Yes, I know that, and you have been very...
And it was because I want to listen... I'll be the first. It's the reason why I'm not in the Trump administration. I'll admit when I'm wrong, and I will apologize when I'm wrong. I don't fit the real Trump mold, I guess.
I want to listen to you.
And your opinions really do matter, because guess what? As I was telling Kyle, the reason why you have your opinions is because something in your life shaped it, and that was something very important. And that does not need to be ignored anymore.
Before we drift too far afield, still the question remains, has the president... one, advanced his agenda as it relates to immigration or immigration reform, or has he moved us in a direction where the country will largely reject what he wants to do with immigration/immigration reform?
The president, all he has to, he's almost, you got to give him this, whether you agree with it or not, he's almost completed everything, almost everything he completed on, at least to his satisfaction, except for one thing, which is building a wall. You build one chip of that wall, and I don't know if he's running for re-election in 2020, because then he can say, look, I built a wall. So in his opinion, has he advanced his agenda? Sure. Does that mean that's all of those pieces of the agenda is the best thing for America? It's for you guys to decide.
Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the wall issue. I find it so stupid, because that's not going to solve any problem. The idea, like, we have to keep the criminals out of here. That's what we have to do. Well, if you want to lower the amount of violent crime... End the drug war. And what'll happen is, because we saw this with prohibition, when alcohol was illegal, there was a giant spike in violent crime because you have the mafia underground selling the product, and they get power and they get money. And then right now, it's the same with the drug cartels. So if you legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana and decriminalize all drugs, you'll see a giant decrease in the amount of violent crime.
Okay, so here's my comment on this one. This is the one thing. I respect your choice. I get that. My husband has glaucoma. He was diagnosed at 28. Glaucoma would help my family. My mother has lung cancer. It would actually, you know, it would help relieve a lot of their pain. Where my issue comes with what you do in your own home or your own bedroom, that is your call. I don't care, you know, if it's, I hate opioids, it is your choice. I am very libertarian, get the government out of as much as I can. What I have a problem with are things, and marijuana is not necessarily fall in this category, but any drugs that might alter my judgment or your judgment that's going to be in a car next to my children when I'm driving. I still want to make sure, alcohol is the same way. We need to encourage responsible ownership of everything from a gun to a joint, to a dollar.
Would you ban alcohol, though?
No, I'm saying we need to encourage responsible ownership.
Okay, but the same with marijuana, right? So allow people to make their own decisions, but encourage them to be responsible?
I think it's a 10th Amendment right. I think it's every state should make the dependent for themselves. And if I live in a state that decides they want to legalize marijuana and I don't agree with it, it's real simple. I can call you, haul, and move. And if every state across the board decides to legalize marijuana, guess what? Okay. Either I change countries or I stay where I am. I think it's a state's issue. I think that's how our founding fathers wanted it. I think it's one of those things that anything that is not outright lined in our Constitution needs to go back to the states and let the people decide. When did the government of Washington, D.C. become more important and more powerful than the people who are actually paying their paychecks on the streets, on Main Street?
Let's move this conversation forward. Something that the president, then-candidate Trump, campaigned on the heels of 7 years of Republicans saying repeal and replace Obamacare. Let's move to health care. Is the president winning given what did or did not get completed so far in his first term?
Oh, he's winning, and that's terrible for the American people, because his agenda is against the American people. So I'll give some information to back that up for everybody. So he gutted Obamacare through various executive orders, and in his first year as president, 3 million people lost health insurance. So I find it amazing and maddening that the Democrats don't bring up that point more often, because it says so much. He pretends like, oh, I'm so great with health care, but 3 million people lost health insurance under your administration. Just 12% of Americans supported his Trump care bill. 12%. That's comically bad. Why? Because it's a terrible bill. So I think that he's winning in this, even though they didn't officially get a repeal of Obamacare through Congress. His executive orders have effectively gotten rid of Obamacare. And, you know, Obamacare is not great. I don't defend it. It's not my ideal system. But it was a step in the right direction. And that's why you're seeing such a terrible system like we're dealing with right now. And his administration is currently involved in a court case to throw out protections for people with pre-existing conditions. And yet again, this is another issue where he goes to his rallies and he always says that he's in favor of protecting people. But that's not true. If you actually are in favor of protecting people with pre-existing conditions, drop the lawsuit. Drop the lawsuit. But they haven't dropped the lawsuit. And he also picked a former drug company executive, Alex Azar, to lead the Health and Human Services. And what's hilarious is that Alex Azar was responsible for price gouging the American people when he worked at Eli Lilly, and now he's in charge of lowering drug prices. So again, sheer fraud and con man.
Okay, so let's back it up. Our healthcare system's been broken. It was unfortunately it's broken for the Affordable Health Care Act. That broke it. The idea right now that no pre-existing conditions exist is a bunch of BS. I will tell you, if you've experienced yourself, it's not that they're going to deny you because you have a pre-existing condition. They're going to find some loophole that you've not been to the doctor for 3 months that they can't find records of. So therefore, they're going to deny you health insurance. I've took this job for health insurance for my family because for the last 2 years, we were denied because my son has a brain tumor, my husband has glaucoma. But no pre-existing conditions. Yeah, but you didn't go to the doctor we don't have any reports from 2007. From July until September, so we're going to deny you. Our healthcare system has been effed up for a really long time. And while I understand single-payer system works, and it somewhat works in England and Canada, and that would be nice, the problem is it would not work in a country like ours. So what do you do about it?
I disagree with that.
Hold on, let me back it up. Mm-hmm. Let me say, here's the thing, is that anytime the government has gotten involved in something, it doesn't help. Okay, education,
true.
Veterans Affairs, it raises the prices. What we need is competition. Get the drug companies out of it.
Let me propose a compromise on this because this is something I've spoken about before. Now, mm-hmm. I of course prefer a Medicare for all system, and I think that all the empirical data backs it up that's objectively a better system, but if you're uncomfortable with it working in a country this large, which again, I don't agree with that, but I would be okay with a law proposed at the federal level that says each individual state has to set up their own state-level, basically single-payer system, Medicare for all system. Would you agree to that compromise?
That would be a good solution to start talking about.
Great.
Because we do. I literally, you will never meet anybody. My parents can't get health insurance. My father was a carpenter his entire life. My mother stopped working in 1980, put out of a job. They don't have health insurance, and they're 75 and 76, and they live in my basement because every day we breathe hoping that neither one of them gets sick because we could sell our farm today. I'm not the only American that's having this problem right now, folks. Yeah. We all know somebody that cannot get health insurance, and just you pray every day that you're not going to be faced to that system of what do I have to sell next to pay for my parents if they catch the flu? This is real, and this is what Washington, D.C. is refusing. So I don't care about any solution. If it's state-based, my biggest fear of giving it completely over the government is they have effed up every other system we've given them. This is too important.
Well, let me just say that according to a study from the Commonwealth Fund, the U.S. ranks dead last among modern nations when it comes to our healthcare system, and the entire top 10 is all single-payer countries.
The problem is, tell that to women that can't get a mammogram because they have breast cancer, they can't get in to see a doctor in Canada. But talk about the dentistry,
Let me jump in there for 1 second, so we're not too far afield. The fundamental question I would think is, has President Trump improved the situation only incrementally, has it become worse under him?
Made it way worse. That's why 3 million people lost their health insurance. There's no way to spin that in a positive direction. And, he brags whenever he feels like he can. If you give him a little nugget of something he can brag about, that he does. Oh, low unemployment rate. It's great. It's tremendous. Forget wages. Don't look at wages, but the low unemployment. Notice he never says anything about, I insured more people. Because you didn't. 3 million people lost insurance. So I think that one fact really...
But the problem is, under Obama, the people that did have insurance is either catastrophic or was really crappy anyways. So this is this fault. Once again, this is not a Democrat, Republican, Trump, better or not. It just has sucked all along.
I don't disagree with the fact that it sucked all along. But at the same time, it's just a fact of reality that we did not have protections for pre-existing conditions pre-Obamacare, and we did post-Obamacare.
But you don't have them. We still don't have pre-existing existence covered. It says it in writing. It is not happening on Main Street. It's not happening in reality.
Okay, well, that is law, though. We agree to that, because that is law at the current moment, even though the Trump administration
is they have all the loopholes that were put in there under the Affordable Health Care Act to deny people for that.
So we go right back to single payers, the answer.
No, because unfortunately...
Unfortunately,
you have to pay for it. You have to incentivize future generations, future doctors. You have to incentivize. If you're just going to do single-payer system, what's going to happen is the healthcare companies, the hospitals, are going to continue to reap money. Because guess what? They haven't taken a cut in their pay since this came in phase in 2008. They're going to continue to reap all the money they can from the government, and there's going to be no reform that actually goes down to cutting costs that's going to actually
Medicare for All saves money. And that's not me speaking. That's a study from the Libertarian Mercatus Institute funded by the Koch brothers. They did a study, and the headline was that, oh, my God, Medicare for All costs $32 trillion. But what they didn't tell you is that the current system costs $34.6 trillion. So the real issue is, how can we afford not to do Medicare for All? That's the real question.
And that's a great line.
Because
the problem
true.
Is you still have to afford it. Our country still has afforded it.
It saves money.
You cannot tell me giving Medicare to every single without a payment put into it.
Well, because here's the thing. You get rid of the private premiums. Those are now gone.
Right.
So would you rather pay $4,000 in taxes a year towards health care or pay $5,000 to a for-profit, rapacious, price-gouging health insurance company that's going to screw you when you come to them for help?
But because they know that they can do it. If you think it's just going to stay at $4,000, tell me what happened to our higher education system once they realized they got government funds. If you think it's just going to stay at $4,000 once the government's given this blank check, it's not. They're going to continue to raise countries, and we can barely afford a lot of the things today. We have inner cities that need money. We have a lot of things that need money right now. They will continue to raise their price because they can, because the government
will
pay.
Just one second. Okay. The cost in Norway, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, Greenland,
Those
Finland,
are not
Australia.
United States countries.
No, I understand that, but I have to respond to the cost point. They pay about half of what we pay for their health coverage, and everybody's covered.
But
so there's no way to spin that against
oranges,
that.
And, yeah, there's apples and oranges between the size that they have to cover and the people, everybody
well,
in their country
said,
pays into their system.
That's why I said do it at the state level. I'm fine with that.
Like I said, we can talk about the state. The key is accountability and everybody paying into the system. And the large amount of people that we would have to cover, everybody would have to pay into it.
Well, that's why I said do it at the state. Okay,
We can't solve health care here. We can't solve it.
We can if we got the for-profit health insurance company money out of the system.
No, I'm talking about this discussion.
Well, we can agree on that one.
Okay. My job is to keep it moving, so let me move to foreign policy, but I want to break it up into three parts.
Sure.
We're going to go country by country. First North Korea, then Iran, then Russia. Let's start with North Korea. Is the president winning, given what he's done or alleged he has done with North Korea? Whoever wants to start.
I'll say this one. The truth will be told in time. I mean, the good news is 2 years ago we thought we were about to be in a nuclear war. I think we were all in that scare factor. It has definitely decreased. I think any time that you have South Korea and North Korea talking and it looks like they're being cordial with each other, that's a positive step. I am praying that we can finally end the Korean War. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think that's needed. So that is a positive step. Now we just have to see if Kim Jong Crazy Man is actually going to continue to denuclearize, and if what the expectations he has from the United States, and if there's something we're willing to work with.
So I'm going to surprise some people on this one, but I think he's done an okay job, perhaps by accident, but he's done a pretty good job on North Korea. So what I want Trump to do on the issue of North Korea is absolutely nothing. I want him to sit back, and I want President Moon, I think it is, of South Korea, to lead the diplomatic negotiations, because it's working. So, and listen, I don't care. My bar for a U.S. president on North Korea is very low. Hey, don't attack them, and we'll be okay.
Hey, let's not have a nuke explode. That's probably a positive sign, too.
So, yes, I'll give him credit on this issue, and this is maybe one of two or three I would give him credit on.
All right, let's go to Iran. The president campaigned on extricating the United States from the Iran deal. He delivered on that. So I guess the question of whether he's winning is less political but more literal, in the sense, are we in a better place with Iran now?
Much worse, I would say. So what they never tell you is that, according to the International Atomic Energy Agency, they verified that the Iranians have been complying with the deal 6 times. So they followed the deal to a T, and then he comes in and pulls us out of the deal, and of course that makes it much more likely that Iran is going to get a nuclear weapon. So this is, honestly, when it comes to Obama, this is maybe in my mind his biggest accomplishment, was getting the Iran deal. And for Trump to rip it up in the same way that he ripped up the Paris Climate Accord, I think that is incredibly dangerous. And I honestly think it stems from this kind of knee-jerk reactionary, I'm going to do the opposite of what the other guy did philosophy. And it's been terrible.
Scotty?
The Middle East right now is unfortunately a powder keg, and that could erupt at any moment. I think Saudi Arabia, the recent events with the journalists in Saudi Arabia and Turkey shows just how temperamental and how much we do and do not know of what's going on in that area. I do know that I want our soldiers out of there. I want our soldiers out of Afghanistan. I want our soldiers. It is
yes.
Time we bring all of them home. I don't know. These guys are going to continue fighting. There's oil involved, there's power involved, there's money involved, there's religion involved, and the one people that shouldn't be involved is the United States, at least from our soldiers' perspective. That being said, Iran was bad. I think it left a bad taste in our mouth of a crate full of unmarked bills that were dumped, you know, that were given to Iran. What also I don't like...
That was their money, by the way.
What
I just had to throw that out there.
Okay,
that's their money. It's not like Obama was like, let's give Iran money that's not theirs. It's a comical notion.
We
stole that money from them through sanctions, and we gave them back.
That's fair. We stole money. Yeah.
Yes, we took their money. We froze their assets.
Okay.
After we overthrew their government, by the way, in 1953.
If you want, we can talk Middle East policy, but the truth of it is, If we want to find things we can agree on, you have allies here. You have Iran versus Saudi Arabia. It's become very obvious that the president likes Saudi Arabia. Arabia likes the president. What's also in here is Israel and Palestine. So you have a lot of different allies that are aligning here. What we've done in Iran is wrong. What we've done in Saudi Arabia is wrong. I don't know if there's a simple solution to either one of them to say right or wrong. Our relations have been wrong with Iran, but I do think that the less that we are involved, just like you said, in North Korea, probably the better at this point, because these guys, they want to fight, and there's nothing we're going to be able to do to actually, if they want to fight, they're going to fight.
I agree with that. And can I just add one more thing real quick, because you mentioned Saudi Arabia there. If you want to cut terrorism perhaps in half or even more, stop giving arms and money to Saudi Arabia, because there was a $110 billion weapons deal, and I got news for people. That money goes directly to jihadists in Yemen and also jihadists in Syria, and so we're funding the exact people that then eventually turn it around on us. It's like what happened in 9/11. Saudi Arabia, 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. And this is what happened even with Ronald Reagan when they armed the Mujahideen because they were fighting the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. We always arm these actors. There was an article in a British newspaper that called Osama bin Laden a freedom fighter. when he was on our side against the Soviet Union. So this is something that's happened, unfortunately, under probably every administration since Ronald Reagan, where we keep arming bad actors, and then it comes back and it bites us in the ass.
Well, how do you feel about Khashoggi?
Oh, terrible.
We're going to get to that in a second, because okay. That's going to be on a different section. That's in the next question. We have to deal with Russia now.
Oh, okay.
Much was made of the president, how he presented himself when he was alongside Vladimir Putin, and that's been received very differently. If you ask the president, he says that he's been tougher on Vladimir Putin than any other U.S. president. If you ask his detractors, you get the exact opposite answer. As we go into the midterms, and we know that Bob Mueller is going to have something to say about that on the other side of the midterms, as of this point, is the president winning on at least the narrative surrounding Russia?
Kyle, let me ask you this question. Why do you think Mueller's holding off till after the midterms to release his statement? What do you think?
Oh, everybody knows that this is going to be an interesting portion of our discussion here. Well, when it comes to Russia, I do have significant disagreement with Donald Trump, but my disagreement with Donald Trump is not what you'd hear from, you know, standard partisan hack Democrats on establishment media. My issue with him is we're very close to an actual confrontation with Russia. And I know people think that he's Vladimir Putin's puppet, but in reality, if you look at the policies, it's scary in the other direction. So, for example, we've sent warships directly to Russia's border on the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. We have them lined up on the border over the Ukraine crisis. And he's increased sanctions on Russia. And even on the issue of Syria, you know, I think we should just stay out of it completely. But certainly, if we're going to get involved, don't back the so-called moderate rebels who, again, 60% of them are hardline Islamists. And this can get us into a bigger confrontation with Russia if we end up geopolitically on the opposite side and then there's a proxy war in Syria. So I favor diplomacy and negotiations. And unfortunately, in this current climate, I think that there's a lot of cheerleading for Donald Trump to actually be more hardline against Russia. And that is something I do not agree with at all.
Absolutely. And you can thank the neocons that are surrounding him, the same neocons that are traveling this week to tell, you've got John Bolton heading over to Russia to tell him that we're going to possibly get increased sanctions on you if you decide to scale back your sanctions against Kim Jong-un in North Korea. You also have Donald Trump this week has said that he is tearing up the 1987 nuclear arms deal. He says Russia's not holding up their end of the bargain. I personally think this is because he thinks that, well, if he tears it up, then we can beef up our nuclear infrastructure here in the United States, which that's never good. I don't know why anybody would think that it's a good idea to go to war with a power like Russia. And I'd say the same thing about China to a certain extent. Why? How in the world can that be a positive? And unfortunately, I think this is where the industrial military complex has taken over a lot of the West Wing. And the only people they're competing with is Goldman Sachs. So it'll be interesting to see which group wins. But right now, you know, unfortunately, the only one that would benefit from war are the ones that get to go buy their new Mercedes. And unfortunately, it puts our boys and our women in tanks.
And let me just say, when it comes to the Mueller investigation, because you touched on that before, I actually think that people are missing the bigger story there. And I think the bigger story is the fact that there are now two emoluments cases that are proceeding against Donald Trump. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that basically means that Donald Trump, through his businesses, he has businesses all over the world, he's accepting money from foreign governments, and the concern is you can't have a U.S. president with a giant business empire like that, because what are you going to do when Saudi Arabia, you know, hands $5 million over to your business, and then they come knocking on your door and say, hey, can I have another $100 billion weapons deal? So that's the real corruption scandal, is that all of these different governments can sway policy, and they're doing it because of his personal businesses. So I think that it should be a matter of law that U.S. presidents have to divest from any international businesses. And that may be the case in court. We'll find out.
Disagree. And then the other side that you actually have to look at on this side of it is you have Trump going forward. You have $275,000 last year Saudi Arabia spent in the Trump Hotel here in D.C.
That's right.
How does that happen? How is that allowed to work? No, listen, there's not much to disagree on that one. I think everybody thought that he would pull away. That was the word that he gave, that he was turning all over to Trump's children or to his own children. It didn't happen. And now that is the price to pay. But when it comes to Mueller, the key about the Mueller case that I find so hard for me is that you look at all the election interference that the United States has done. I mean, are you kidding me? Our CIA was founded to get involved in Italy from making sure that the pro-American Democrats were elected over the pro-socialist Democrats in Italy. Our CIA was founded to meddle in elections.
That's right.
And they're thinking that you and I and everybody thinking we can be persuaded by a bunch of memes, that that's going to change our vote because we saw a meme. I mean, that's insulting almost to the American people. So, you know, and we got involved. I mean, name me a country that the Americans have not. Doesn't make it, you know, right or wrong, and I'm not going to criticize America. But before we go start, what's the old adage? Before you cast stones, make sure you don't live in a glass house. Come on.
Let me jump in here. As an adjunct, I say, is tangentially related to foreign policy. It's a human rights discussion. Now we can talk about Khashoggi. Now we can talk about China and so forth. Has this president done enough or is winning in terms of human rights? And it's also connected to the immigration debate, if you want to go there. How is this president doing on human rights abuses or holding those countries to account?
Yeah, he's the one doing the human rights abuses. You know, another one of these facts that I wish people would talk about more, but you never hear this, is that he increased drone strikes 432%. He escalated Afghanistan and Syria and Iraq. And this is all when, I mean, you can go back, I've tweeted this. Donald Trump used to rail against being in Afghanistan on a regular basis. I mean, there's like 10, 12 different tweets from saying it's so stupid that we're there, we need to get out. Well, now that he's president, he does the exact opposite, and it's maddening, and it is because the neocons are in his ear, people like John Bolton and Mike Pompeo. He also increased military spending by $80 billion. Now, that's at a time. The United States, our military is bigger than the next 9 biggest militaries combined, and most of them are our allies. So we spend all this money on the military when, meanwhile, 29 million Americans don't have health insurance. So it's just a total misalignment of priorities. And another point, the final point I want to bring up about this is that his first military raid as president actually killed an 8-year-old American girl, and her name is Nawar Al-Awlaki. And nobody talks about that, and that drives me nuts because, you know, the scandals are always over, oh my God, Donald Trump in a rally said something silly, and let's talk about that for 3 days. But nobody says, oh my goodness, we have a war criminal president who ordered a raid that killed an 8-year-old American girl. I mean, if any other country did something like that, we would be screaming that they need to be dragged in front of the International Criminal Court.
Well, a country kind of did that. It's called Saudi Arabia. We've just seen it with Khashoggi. And we're not screaming. We, you know, Skripal happened, and all of a sudden we're pulling out our Russian diplomats. We're kicking the Russian diplomats out, and we're putting all these sanctions on them. And yet now we've got this case, and we need to not rush to judgment on it. Now, granted, most people don't realize Khashoggi was not a nice guy, okay?
Doesn't matter.
I know that. And that's what I'm saying. But, I mean, he was friends with Osama bin Laden. He was friends with the Muslim Brotherhood. It doesn't matter, though. We had intelligence that it possibly was going to happen, and we did nothing to stop it. And we're doing nothing to hold Saudi Arabia accountable except cash the check that we got last week for a couple $100 million that they had promised us last summer. So there is a major, but at the same time, Saudi Arabia has horrible on women's issues. Mm-hmm. All of the Middle East is horrible on women's issues. Now, is it our job to go in there and say, we're not going to talk to you until? No, but at the same time, we could do a lot better in having the conversation and promoting it. When you have women that get beat just for the suspicion of looking at a man, when we all know the stories. We've heard the horror stories that happen in the Middle East for women over there. So I think, you know, that's a conversation that needs to be happening. Isn't necessarily something that it's the same. Nothing's changed.
And let's just also point out that Saudi Arabia is doing a genocide in Yemen as we speak. And I'm very happy that the instance with this journalist has blown up and now everybody's talking about it and how bad Saudi Arabia is. But let's just not forget that they are committing a genocide with our weapons. And we just kind of sat idly by and said, oh, good. Well, you're on our team anyway, so we're just going to shut up about it and pretend like it's not happening. So we're in no place at all to lecture the rest of the world about human rights. We're responsible for what we do. You can only stop the bad actions that you're participating in. So like I said, immediately cut off all funds to Saudi Arabia, sanction Saudi Arabia. I would honestly do the same with Israel and stop funding them and giving them all the money and weapons that they have.
Now, hold on here.
Go ahead, Scotty.
I you know, there's a big difference right now between the Saudi Arabia, the Saudis. Granted, Israel is one of our biggest allies. And I don't go for the anti-Semitic talk. I'm sorry.
Well, that's not anti-Semitism. That's not anti-Semitism.
Saying cut off funding to Israel, talking of, to having people...
Keep going.
Like I said, we this is something we are going to disagree on. And I, you
but it's just not anti-Semitism. I just want to clear that up. When you say, hey, stop violating human rights.
Off, Israel treats their actual citizens very well. Their women have a lot of freedom.
I think he's talking about Gaza and so forth.
But we're talking, what you're upset about is trying to go against the Palestinians.
Hold on. We got 2 pounds.
What I'm trying to see, we can talk about it. It's a very volatile area, guys. It's very complicated at the same time. You have to respect both sides on this issue. Palestine thinks they have laid to the land. Israel thinks they do as well.
Saying is I don't respect the argument of let's arm a war criminal like Benjamin Netanyahu and watch him obliterate Gaza with 80% civilian casualties like he did in 2014.
All right, we're running low on time. There are a couple of the issues I did want to hit. We know what the president has done vis-a-vis climate change, pulled out of the Paris Accords. You made mention of that, Kyle. I wonder, is he winning the debate in the sense of is the United States moving further away from what they should be doing, air quotes, should be doing with climate change, or is he losing that debate?
Well, he's winning in the sense that he's getting done what he wants to get done, but that is a loss for all of humanity. Because there was just a climate change report that came out. It was actually from his administration, ironically, where they said we're going to have a 7-degree temperature increase by the year 2100. And that is beyond catastrophic. They said if we don't radically change course by 2030, we're done. The planet is done. And I know that sounds hyperbolic, but is it really? I mean, all the evidence is pointing to the fact that this is really happening and it's going to be a disaster. And there's going to come a time where we literally have wars over water. There's going to come a time when, the cost of just regular goods and food just spikes drastically because there's drought and famine everywhere. And an issue that I think should appeal to conservatives, because they say they care about this, is if you're against, letting immigrants in or refugees in, listen, that's going to be the biggest refugee crisis ever because they're going to have to empty out the Middle East by 2100 because it's going to be too hot for humans to live there. So you think the Syrian refugee crisis is bad? Wait until you get a load of the climate change refugee crisis.
Here's where I think the common ground between the groups are. And this is how I feel about it. Whether you think climate change is happening, it's man-made, or it's climate change just because that's just how time is going. Fine. As long as the end result is you're doing whatever you can to take care of our planet, I don't care what you believe. And that's where we need to have the conversation. Unfortunately, that's not happening right now. You either love climate change and hate the planet, or you love climate, you hate climate change and you don't believe the planet. I mean, it's too polarized. The key is the end result. And I think across the board, everybody has to understand they have to do their own part in taking care of our planet, whatever that might be, and take responsibility for it for the future.
I think we should do a new deal where we build the technology of the future.
The
renewable energy revolution, where we also give people millions of jobs in the process.
Government-funded jobs?
There's a role to play for both the private sector and the public sector, and I think, we can use the New Deal as our model going forward and literally do a new deal, and we could go down this path and finally get off fossil fuels, which is it's just absolutely necessary, according to scientists.
Well, I think the biggest thing is with the Paris Climate Accord is every country has to be held accountable for it. Yes, the United States puts their contribution into it, but let's also hold Asia accountable. Let's hold Europe accountable. Let's hold Russia. Let's hold everybody accountable to the same standards. Because we might take care of our country, we might abide by it, but guess this is a world. This is one issue that is a global issue. And if not everybody's doing their part, it only punishes those that are trying to be.
But we do more carbon emissions, so I mean...
Asia, have you looked at Asia the pollution in China right
sure,
now, in
no,
Hong Kong?
And
you can't compare us to them right now.
No, and I'm not saying that, where other nations are polluting, that they shouldn't also be held to a high standard. But what I am saying is, the argument from the United States, and specifically from the Trump administration, was like, oh God, they're singling us out in the Paris Climate Agreement. And that's just not the case. The reality is, we are one of the top polluters, and we have more carbon emissions than most other countries. So, of course, by definition, you're going to have to do more because you're already doing worse. So that's why they they had to do that.
But then this is where this all rounds back in together. One of the reasons why Chinese products can be so cheap, one of the reasons why NAFTA was such a bad deal and the World Trade Organization is so bad for us, is because we do put these regulations on business. And it does hurt the people that are trying to get jobs because they can't compete with China that doesn't have the EPA regulations that we have here. And so they can produce a cheaper good. It's where it all comes back together. So if we're going to do it, let's do it across the board to where everybody's, then our workers can be leveled out, can be fair and compete, and you won't have lesser products that are made without having the same regulations we have.
You can stop the outsourcing without also destroying the climate in the process. Those are separate issues.
So then let's not destroy the client over there, the climate over in Asia either. Let's have it across the board. If you truly believe in it, let's hold us all to the same standards, same accountability.
But if Burundi doesn't have as much pollution as we do,
but
then
Hong Kong
does.
Japan and China, the biggest, we're not abiding by.
All right, I'm jumping in now. Last question, and this is the one where I need you to go for broke. As I see it right now, the president is enjoying, air quotes, his highest approval rating, second highest in his presidency. You can make the argument that he is stronger and more popular now than ever before in his presidency, with the exception of right after his inauguration. I would make the argument, you can either buy or sell on this, that there's a distinct possibility that President Trump will be reelected. I want to hear from you your strongest argument why that is going to happen or is not going to happen.
No, I'm going to let you go first on this
one. You go. Go ahead. I'll let you go.
Thank you. Well, you know, pending Kanye and Candace Owens running, I don't know. No. The thing is about 2020, I'm still one of those. I'm still not completely, well, if he, with these numbers stay, which could be doubtful depending on what goes on the next 2 years, the Republican Party is still extremely fractured. But so is the Democrat Party. There's still a lot of healing that needs to go on within the Bernie Sanders fan. There's a lot of supporters that deserve apologies for what happened to you guys. And it's just as bad on the Republican side, too. But I stopped holding my breath for an apology for how they discounted the different groups. So if there's more people probably, there's more establishment Republicans that want to see Donald Trump lose than probably Democrats are. So if Trump is able to somehow continue, the reason why Trump won was that, honestly, 6 weeks before the election, a lot of people got notices in their mailbox that their health care was canceled or that their premiums were going up. And that was in key states like Minnesota, Wisconsin, South Carolina, North Dakota, Virginia, Tennessee. Key states. That right there. And people went, you know what? I don't know about him, but I know what we have isn't working, and I'm not going to stick with it. That is one, you know, one case right there. So it all depends on what is happening at the time. I do think he could be reelected if he gets back to his populist theme, but he's going to have to justify some actual results from his promises, because that's the one thing is people can't take anymore, our broken promises. They don't. They won't go for another term of that.
Yeah.
And the Democrats got to find somebody to go up against him. I'm sorry, the field's a little weak right now. Not saying the Republicans have too much, but I mean, Joe.
I think the reason Trump won is because he was up against Hillary Clinton. I think that's so. She was like the only person in America who would have lost to Donald Trump. But anyway, I think the way that he can win is, and I still think he's underestimated to this day, in that he really does relentlessly make his own case, and he goes to these rallies. And don't get me wrong, I disagree with him, and he lies nonstop, but he is out there making his case, and he's talking directly to his base, and he's trying to get his base to turn out in the midterms. I'm sure he's going to do the same in 2020. I think every president from here on out should steal that trick and go and do rallies and do them on a regular basis.
Did you see Joe Biden's rally? Didn't look so good today.
I didn't see it, and I don't care about Joe Biden.
Yeah, very little. So, yeah.
But the way that Donald Trump loses is if the Democrats embrace the populist left message and they go full bore in Bernie Sanders' direction. So if you have, and honestly, it's not even specifically about Bernie Sanders, and I think every Bernie supporter will admit this, that ultimately it's about his ideas and his policies, and we don't care how that comes about. But so I think if you have a Democratic Party that is for Medicare for all, they're for free college, they're for a living wage, they're for ending the wars, they're for a new deal, they're for ending the drug war, if they're willing to fight on the issues and they're willing to be anti-establishment and anti-corruption and they're willing to say, I'm not going to take any corporate PAC money, I'm only going to take in small dollar donations, I think if the Democrats do that, then I think Donald Trump has no chance of winning.
We're going to have to end it right there. We didn't have a Q&A. I can't speak for my guests, but please welcome Scotty Nell Hughes. Or I should say, please thank. And please thank Kyle Kulinski for a fantastic, civil conversation.